The certified, in the first instance certified case, so the government will go first.
Judge Baker, Senior Judge Efron.
Can you hear in the back? No, you need to do something. Okay.
Chief Judge Baker, Senior Judge Efron, Judge of the Court. May it please the Court, my name is Major Dan Maurer. Captain Chad Fisher and I represent the United States. It is not the state of the law that an adult can enter an online chat room, engage in graphic sexual descriptions of intercourse with a minor child, convince that minor child to engage in future sexual activity that is illegal, and yet get away scot-free, simply because he had no ultimate intent to actually engage in sex. Yet that is the logical consequence of the Army Court's decision below. And that decision should be set aside for three reasons. One, that understanding of the intent under 2422B, the parts of the plain language of the statute. Second, contrary to this Court's interpretation, starting with Brooks. Third, it departs from the overwhelming slew of case law of the circuit courts. With regard to the plain language, it sets out clearly what the predicate offense is: persuasion, enticement, inducement, or coercion of a minor, or the attempt to do so.
How do you define entice or enticement?
Well, interestingly, Your Honor,
there weren't a lot of definitions provided in the briefs, and usually there's 500 dictionaries cited on such a matter. What's your plain English definition of entice?
Basically, Your Honor, I believe it simply means to convince another person to change their mind. And that kind of simple common sense definition is laid out, I think, in Engel, at least, from the Fourth Circuit, which the lower court did cite to. But if you do look at I think we cited four different dictionaries in our brief in a footnote, and all of them define these predicate terms, persuade, induce, entice, using similar language. They use overlapping language, so several of them use coerce or convince in definitions of entice and persuade.
Change mind about what?
Anything, Your Honor. Anything that...
Well, in this instance... Change mind about what? Engaging in sexual activity?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. Basically,
well, then doesn't that just doesn't that basically support what the court did?
No, not at all, Your Honor, because I think what the court understood intent to mean was really a blend of two different intents. One, the intent to convince the minor to change their mind, and the second, immaterial intent to engage in sex, which is not what this crime is about.
Well, I forgive me, but you seem to be conflating the two. I mean, you just said change your mind about engaging in sex.
Yes, Your Honor. The purpose of this crime is to punish those who use means of interstate commerce, here the Internet, to change the mind of a minor to agree to engage in sex. Whether that sex actual or any kind of illegal sexual activity occurs is immaterial to this offense. That's not what Congress intended, as laid out in the House discussion, which is not cited by the Army Court at all. They cite the failure to pass the contact amendment as evidence of legislative intent. That's immaterial. Here, the ultimate intent is, I believe, as Duenell and Bailey said, to change the mindset of the minor. And that is all that is required, or the attempt to change the mindset of the minor in this case.
Now, you said whether the sexual act actually occurs, is it the occurrence of the act or is it the intent that the act occur that's at issue in this case?
Well, the Army Court believes it's the intent that the act occur. But the plain meaning of the statute and how this Court has interpreted intent in Brooks, Garner, and Winkleman, implicitly granted, and how the other circuits interpret it, is simply the intent to change the minor's mind, or to use some of their language, the minor's assent. There are many ways to say that, but basically it means, did you convince the minor to agree to engage in what would be illegal sex? That is the predicate offense, again, or the attempt to do so under 2422.
An attempt is applicable here because it wasn't, in fact, a minor,
yes,
but a law officer.
That's correct.
That's why it's an attempt, not because something else did or did
that's
not happen.
Yes, sir. So that is the theory of attempt under that was tried at the lower court. So again, the plain language sets out the predicate offense, the underlying offense, which is the persuasion, inducement, enticement, or coercion of a minor. That is a change in mindset, and then or the attempt to do so. And
why not just adopt the solicit or lure definition that Blacks gives us? It seems very complicated to talk about changing a minor's mind
Well, then it becomes...
Assuming that there's something to be changed. I mean, the minors at home thinking, no, I'm not going to have sex. I mean, the whole idea is that they're at home doing, playing Legos or something, right? I mean,
well, Your Honor,
why do
again,
we have to change anybody's mind? Isn't this just an issue of solicitation?
It can be, Your Honor. And I think if you look at the legislative, if you're deviated apart from the plain language of the statute and you want to look for further meaning in the legislative history, I think Congress is quite clear when it looks at... Again, looking at the conference agreements between the House and the Senate in crafting 2422B back in 1996. And there they talk about having, quote, a purpose of luring, or the statute having a, quote, purpose of luring, enticing, or coercing a minor into a sexual crime. Again, there they not conflate or blend, but use the same language, entice, lure. Now, what I think the Army Corps was getting at was you can't lure someone in without the intent to actually feed off that capture. You can lure someone without actually capturing anything. Luring is simply throwing the cast out and hoping for a bite. Whether the bite happens or not is going to throw it. Now, if you look at this court's opinions in Garr, Winkleman, Brooks, again, not directly on point, but all implicitly understand the intent element of 2422B under an attempt theory to mean to encompass the influence of a minor to engage in sexual activity. That comes from Brooks. In fact, this court cited Sixth Circuit Bailey, noting that 2422B does not require the accused actually attempt a sexual act, only that the accused had, quote, the intent to persuade. Same thing in Garner. And in Winkler, again, not directly on point, but when you laid out the necessary elements of attempt under 2422B, you said, quote, government must prove inter alia that the defendant, one, had the intent to entice, and two, took a substantial step toward enticement.
You said, could you speak up a little? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Again, if you look at the cases from Brooks, Garner, and Winkleman, all of this, okay. Those three cases all cite the same circuits, same cases that the dissent in the Army Corps cited to as well. And if you look at the spectrum of those cases, again, extending in every number of circuits, going back to the year 2000, I don't want to say universal, but almost universal agreement about what intent means under 2422B, under an attempt theory of conviction.
Is Lebowitz an outlier?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the best way to describe it would be as an outlier. And if you look at Lebowitz, again, it's the most important case from 2012. When it talks about what the intent is, it does so completely devoid of any context. It doesn't cite to the plain language of the statute. It doesn't cite to legislative history. It doesn't even cite to any of the pre-preceding cases in the 11th Circuit that have contrary understanding of intent. That would be Morrell, Rothenberg, and Lee, one of which was as recent as 2011. So that case should be marginalized, government argues, because it's simply devoid of any legal analysis and it doesn't distinguish or cite any other contrary or supporting case. In fact, the Army Court cited to three cases, Pearson, Young, and Shin, that suggest the completely contrary understanding of intent that the Army Corps cited. In Pearson, 8th Circuit, 2008, government need not prove that the defendant intended to participate with this flag. It is sufficient for the government to prove that the defendant intended to persuade or entice a minor to engage in illegal sexual activity. Yet that case is cited in a string of cases by the Army Corps. Young is similarly situated. Okay, if you look at the spread of cases from the circuit courts, whether it's talking about the defendant's direct contact with the internet with an actual minor, with an undercover agent posing as a minor, with a third-party intermediary, with regard to guilty pleas, judge alone contests, jury convictions, directly on point discussing the meaning of intent, the constitutionality of 2422B, evidentiary sufficiency, or jury instructions, all talk about intent and discuss it in terms of the intent to achieve the minor's intent. The intent to persuade the minor has nothing to do with whether the accused actually captured the mind and actually had sex with the minor.
Can you turn to the plea providence question?
Yes, Your Honor.
And talk about how the military judge did or did not draw the appellant's attention to the elements for an attempt and how the law related to the facts.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I think this is a fairly straightforward analysis, looking at the totality of the case, the totality of the record before it, under Rizlinski, for example. You're not simply looking at whether the judge defined each element. That is, of course, most useful. However, if the
evidence... In other words, it didn't happen, right?
Correct. Okay. It did not happen.
So you're here to argue that the totality of the circumstances or something otherwise put the appellant on notice, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. I would point to two specific things. One, the extremely detailed stipulation of fact. Not just the stipulation of fact, but the detailed nature of the stipulation of fact. 7 pages worth of describing his specific language.
There are tons of facts, but isn't the issue whether there was enough to relate those facts to the law?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think when you take into consideration his stipulation fact plus his plea colloquy, which both during both of those scenarios, both of those scenes, as you put it, if you will, the accused described those acts as being the substantial step with regard to intent.
Did he use the terminology substantial step?
He admitted, looking at paragraph 10 on the stipulation of fact, Your Honor, he admitted that he told what he believed to be Taylor, these things to quote entice her.
But my real question is, did he use terminology that would indicate he understood what the law was, or just terminology that satisfies the law?
I believe probably that satisfies the law. He didn't explicitly say my substantial step was the follow.
But we should infer from this that he understood the law.
I think you can infer from the detailed descriptions of the multiple things that he said and things that he did, with the sending the digital photographs of his penis, asking for phone numbers, et cetera, all clearly imply that he understood that his substantial step was required. If you look at...
Why? I'm having a little trouble following that.
Sure.
I understand how all of that would suffice to sustain a conviction or to sustain an otherwise provident plea. What language would you point to in the colloquy that would show that he understood that substantial step is an element to which he had to plead guilty and demonstrate specific facts?
Yes, sir. At record 4041, Shell pointed directly to his instant messaging and through sending the photos. His conduct was intended to, quote, persuade Taylor to, quote, commit sexual acts with any other individual.
Counsel, you're doing the same thing that the government continues to do in this general, in general, which is to confuse legal sufficiency with the different questions that we're asking. So they're asking you to show where in the colloquy did the military judge explain what a substantial step was and ask him how he was guilty of it, which is different than the facts that you're giving us, which I agree would be legally sufficient to support that element, but that's a different question.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll give you two answers. The first answer is the judge did describe the substantial step element with regard to Article 80, both specifications, immediately preceding the discussion and the transition to 2422B. So granted, they are different offenses, but the underlying attempt law is the same. They require substantial step and the intent to achieve the underlying offense.
Is that a harmless error analysis? Then, when you're in that situation, that is it a question of whether the judge erred in failing to specifically mention that element with respect to this offense? But the government's argument is that it's harmless because, in the totality of the circumstances, people would know. Or is the argument that the judge's presentation was sufficient in the colloquy?
I think the argument is, and the government's position is, that the colloquy plus the stipulation fact is sufficient to give him notice of the substantial step element, therefore the plea was satisfactory under care. And I would point to what this court said in Garner in 2010, where the accused admits going beyond mere preparation and points to, quote, a particular action satisfies himself on this point. Under those conditions, this court warned that, quote, it is neither legally nor logically well-founded to say that actions that may be ambiguous on this point fall short of the line as a matter of law, as to be substantially inconsistent with the guilty plea. And I would also note that if you look at record at 20, the judge reminded Sergeant Shell and his counsel that all three specifications, the two Article 80s and the federal crime under 134, are attempt offenses. He explained to Sergeant Shell, again record 20, that conduct must amount to more than mere preparation. So he correctly defines substantial step right there. Again, as, quote, one that is strongly corroborative of your criminal intent and indicative of your resolve to commit the offense. Interestingly, the accused nor defense counsel had any objection to these definitions, didn't ask for more explanation or definition or clarity.
Whose responsibility is it to make sure that the plea colloquy is sufficient? It's not the defendant's, is it?
No, not at all. And we're not saying that at all. But it is interesting to note that certainly at the time of the trial, the counsel, both parties believed that there was no question about what intent meant. that it requires a substantial step, and that his stipulation, in fact, went to those details. I see my time is almost expired. Let's hear further questions.
You have time on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, I'm Captain Brandon Urie, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Potter, we represent the FLE and cross-appellate Sergeant Nicholas Shell. Regarding the certified issue, the Army Court of Criminal Appeals in an en banc decision was correct in defining the required intent to be found guilty of 18 U.S.C. 2422B for three reasons. One, the plain language of the statute, read in its entirety, is consistent with the Army Court's interpretation. Two, legislative history provides a thorough discussion behind the intent of the statute. And three, recent Federal Circuit Court cases concur with the Army Court's position. Now, the government would have this court read the statute without interpreting the express words that criminalize the act. Congress was very clear with their word choice, and these words demand attention, particularly the persuasion, inducement, enticement, or coercion of a child to engage in a sexual act. And as Chief Judge Baker pointed out to the government, entice, Black's Law Dictionary holds it, to lure or to wrongfully solicit a person to do something.
So why, if you accept that definition, we'll say solicit or lure, and why isn't this solicitation, regardless of intent to have the actual sex, why isn't solicitation to say, would you like to have sex?
Your Honor, if we are looking at the solicitation as defined in the offenses in the MCM, namely Article 82 and Article 134, both of which are solicitation offenses, both of those offenses require as a second element that the accused solicited with the intent that the offense actually be committed. And in this instance, Sergeant Shell, during his unsworn statement, stated that he did not have that intent. So that would not satisfy solicitation as far if we adopted that definition from the MCM.
Is there an argument to be made that Congress intended in the case of children that the mere solicitation without the intent to follow through should be adequate because they're children?
No, Your Honor. And that's made plain with the legislative history that's accompanied with 2422B. By looking at the legislative history, there was an amendment that was proposed to be enumerated as 18 U.S.C. 2422C, which would have criminalized exactly what Chief Judge Baker
said. This is the contact amendment?
Yes, Your Honor.
Contact amendment?
Yes, Your Honor. And proponents in Congress that wanted, that felt that they needed the contact amendment to be passed, was specifically, and this is placed in the House of Representatives report, because the current statute, 2422B, the one that Sergeant Shell was charged with, allowed adults to establish a prolonged, intimate, and highly destructive relationship with a child involving explicit sexual language without violating the law. And that is why they felt the need that the contact amendment be passed. However, the contact amendment was not passed.
Well, is that what the appellee did here? Engage in a prolonged sexual seduction attempt and not violate statute?
I mean, I don't know if I would use the word seduction.
Well,
but it is,
you know, you're the one that's citing the House report, and
yes,
it sounds like, well, yeah, but it doesn't violate statute, and if it doesn't violate the statute, it doesn't. But is that what happened here,
Your Honor? Sergeant Shell was involved with a total of a 6-hour discussion over a two-day period.
Okay.
Do we believe that amounts to seduction? No, but Judge Ryan pointed out, this is not a legal sufficiency.
No, it's not.
And we do not believe that the intent was clearly satisfied.
Does Congress really want courts of appeals to get into the subjective intent of the accused in cases like this? Isn't the requirement of a substantial step beyond thinking about it enough to get out of prosecuting thought crimes?
Your Honor, as this court decided in U.S. v. Winkleman, the discussions and apparently the thoughts behind those discussions can satisfy substantial stuff, which is also enumerated in, or which is also explained in...
Was Winkleman wrongly decided?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Was Winkleman wrongly decided?
Oh, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
Winkleman, the issue there was the sufficiency of the evidence
right.
For what constitutes a substantial step, the text of you free tonight. So no, Your Honor. The Army Court's opinion in U.S. v. Shell does not conflict with U.S. v. Gardner or U.S. v. Winkleman in any instance.
But it does conflict with 11 circuits, doesn't it?
Your Honor, there does appear to be a split between the circuits, and it is
well, yeah, like
that,
one and ten.
Oh, no,
if
Your
you
Honor.
Count Leibowitz.
No, Your Honor, the 5th, 8th, and 11th circuits have all adopted within the past 2 years, which is important to note, the same intent requirement that the Army Court expressed in their opinion. The 5th Circuit in U.S. v. Lundy and the 11th Circuit in U.S. v. Leibowitz held that it is necessary that the defendant intend to engage in the criminal sexual activity. In addition, the 8th Circuit, which is very popular for their model criminal jury instructions, adopted criminal instructions that echoed the very same requirement. These circuits are aligned.
Oh, they didn't have a case. They adopted instructions. So really, you got cases more or less from two circuits.
Yes, Your Honor. We also have the 9th Circuit in U.S. v. Hofus, which is a recent case in 2010 that expressed concern with the current majority standard, the minor's assent standard. And the judge there dissented in Hofus, expressing that the intent should essentially concur with the Army Court's decision. Those three reasons, the plain language of the statute, the legislative history, with the MCM's interpretation of the solicitation, as well as the Federal Circuit Court cases, all support why the Army Court's decision should be affirmed. If there are no further questions, I'll move on to...
Well, what offense was the accused soliciting the other person to commit here?
To have sexual intercourse, or he was charged with the attempted inducement enticement.
I understand that, but for the other person, would that be an offense by that other person to engage in that conduct? Would that be a crime? I'm looking to your analogy to the solicitation offense under the code, whether it's solicitation under the solicitation article or solicitation under Article 134, both of which appear to be directed to soliciting another person to commit a criminal offense. And you're analogizing this solicitation to those two articles. So my question is, in those two articles, you're primarily concerned about soliciting a person to commit a criminal offense. Here, what criminal offense was the accused charged with committing and in terms of soliciting another person to commit a crime?
Your Honor, first and foremost, we are not saying that the solicitation offense is under 82. Well, definitely not 82 or 134 would have covered the offense for which you...
I understand that, but by analogy, you were saying that the requirement in those cases that there be an intent that the other person commit the crime was the analogy that you wanted to apply here. And my question is why? Those cases involve asking another person to commit a crime. This case does not involve asking another person to commit a crime. So why should the analogy apply?
Merely because solicitation appears to be flushed out on the intent that's required in order to solicit. The second element of both the 82 and 134 offenses, not the continued elements, the 3 and 4, but merely because it seems to aid this court, much as this court analyzed in Lewis v. Kumarel in 2009, if there are any parallel provisions provided in the
end. Why shouldn't we draw the opposite conclusion, that since this does not involve soliciting another person to commit a crime, that intent should not apply here?
Well, Your Honor, we believe, merely because it was a response to Chief Judge Baker's question as far as the definition for enticement, which it was included, to lure or solicit. But we believe that the intent...
So you're just responding to him, but you're not on your own taking that position?
Merely to give assistance to this court that the MCM discusses at least what is required for the intent for solicitation. But, Your Honor, to the plain language of the statute, we believe that the intent is inherent in the language. And the government would have you stop reading the statute prior to the to engage portion. It is not a crime to persuade, entice, induce, or coerce a minor, period. That is not a crime. It is to engage in illegal sexual activity. That is the mens rea that must be present. And we believe that the congressional history, as well as the plain reading of the statute, includes that intent into the verbs, the actions.
Well, what was he enticing him to do? He was enticing him to do nothing? What's the point of the enticement?
Your Honor, because of the inconsistent matter that was set forth, Sergeant Shell said he did not intend to engage in illegal sexual activity. And as the Army Corps discussed very thoroughly in their opinion, if you do not intend for the minor to do anything, you are not intending to do anything at all. You are not persuading. You are not enticing. You are not coercing. And therefore, the Army Corps found that because he did not have this mens rea, he could not be guilty for this offense, or at least there was an inconsistent matter.
Could Congress pass a statute which expressly said along the following lines? It's a crime to entice another person to engage in sexual activity, irrespective of whether the person uttering those words intends that the person to whom they're directed would engage in the sexual activity. Can Congress write a statute like that?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe they could.
And why is it that the Congress didn't do so in this case?
In this case, Your Honor, it's clear from legislative history that they were intending on targeting pedophiles from contacting minors for the purposes of engaging in illegal sexual activity, not merely the corruption of them.
And does the legislative history expressly state that the words in the statute preclude a conviction in an event that the proof only goes to the intent that the person to whom the words are directed would change their mind or decide to engage in that behavior, irrespective of the intent of the person uttering the words?
No, Your Honor. Unfortunately, the statute does not go into...
And the legislative history doesn't go that way either, does it?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why should we rely on the legislative history when it can be viewed in a manner that's consistent with the statute?
We believe that the legislative history is consistent with the statute's plain language. Legislative history provides that the statute was designed to protect youth from production of child pornography, rape, assault, robbery, or worse. The end result is what they are targeting for pedophiles, not merely the corruption or sexually fueled, irresponsible discussions with a minor. Never in the legislative history have they said that is what they are targeting.
I understand what you're saying they didn't say, but at any point did the Congress disavow an intent or a purpose to go that further step?
No, Your Honor, they did not.
Thank you.
But we would like to make clear that Sergeant Shell's actions would have been criminal under numerous other federal offenses. Surely the MCM has offenses in which he could have been criminalized, as well as 18 U.S.C. 1462, which is the obscenity clause. So there are offenses. Congress has in place offenses for other types of conduct, arguably what Sergeant Shell would have been guilty of. But clearly 2422B is not that offense.
Well, you said otherwise in the statute. Is there something in the statute that would have preempted this offense?
No, Your Honor. As far as an MCM offense, Your Honor?
Right.
No. And it is discussed in the Army Corps' analysis. If there was a lower intent that was required, there may be a preemption issue, which is discussed by the lower court. And for those reasons, we believe that the Army Corps' decision should be affirmed, and I would like to move on to the granted issue.
Please do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Regarding the military judge's failure to ensure that Sergeant Shell's plea was knowing and voluntary to the Article 134 UCMJ offense, the military judge was required to, one, ensure Sergeant Shell understood the elements of an attempt offense, and two, admit facts to satisfy the crime. And that's coming from U.S. v. Lindsay and Carey.
Well, and didn't he do exactly that? Didn't he admit during the colloquy, didn't he fundamentally admit that he knew a substantial step was an element of the offense? He used the word step. What more is necessary?
Your Honor, we will not argue, or we don't argue, that there is insufficient facts laid out before the court. However, even if Sergeant Shell provided an adequate factual basis for his plea was not provident because he did not understand how the law related to him. Half of a two-step piece was missing.
Well, if he knew that a substantial step was an element of the offense and he admitted taking a substantial step, what didn't he understand?
What a substantial step was, or the law that applied to him for this criminal action regarding the Article 134 offense. Although, Your Honor, he does discuss, and the military judge does a great job of discussing what a substantial step is for the Article 80 offenses. The military judge does not discuss what a substantial
step is. Well, I'm not interested. I'm not talking about what the judge did. I'm talking about what the accused did. And he seems to have admitted during the colloquy with the judge that he knew a substantial step was required and he took it. How much more is required?
The law, Your Honor. Sergeant Shell must know that his acts pertaining to a certain law are criminal. And because he was never told what the law was for a substantial step to the Article 134 offense, which the military judge herself said was fairly involved description of the elements in page or record of trial 40, did not know how his facts applied to the law in which to make his actions criminal. And that simply was not done here, Your Honor. Nor does the military judge try to cross-reference the Article 80 substantial step definitions into the Article 134, which has been frowned upon by this court, but the military judge does not even attempt to do that. There is no indication in the record that Sergeant Shell understood what law applied to his facts for the Article 134 offense. And it was the responsibility of the military judge to ensure that the defendant knew the criminality of his actions. The military judge failed this responsibility and therefore created a substantial step, or substantial basis in law and fact to question Sergeant Shell's plea. We ask this court for those two following reasons to affirm the lower court.
Thank you, counsel. The government, your opportunity for rebuttal.
In terms of the court, I'd just like to highlight a couple things. My colleague addressed legislative history multiple times, and the only legislative history the defense points to is the legislative history, and I use that term loosely, of an amendment that didn't pass. It's not actually legislation at all. And this court and Supreme Court has frowned upon the use of failed amendments, failed to legislation to indicate by implication what another statute that did pass actually means. If you want to look at what this statute actually means, look at the conference agreement between the House and the Senate in 1996. There, they clearly said, we have a purpose to prevent luring, enticing, and coercing minors into a sexual crime, and to, quote, protect children and families from online harm. Online harm, not the actual potential end state of physical harm by raping or any kind of sexual intercourse with a minor. That is a distinct crime altogether. Legislative history clearly of this statute clearly envisions its congressional intent to criminalize grooming and setting the groundwork for potential future sex, to change the mind of a minor to go from no or I don't know to have sex with an adult to yes, I will have sex with an adult. That is the crime that Congress envisioned. That is the crime that Congress passed. That is the crime every circuit has understood it to be.
Counsel, I understand your argument as to why you believe that particular legislative history should not be relied on in this case, but just to make clear, you have not cited or referenced a specific case from either the Supreme Court or this court that precludes reference or even reliance on an inappropriate case of legislative history of a failed amendment. And I just want to make clear, get clear from the government, is it your position that this court could never rely upon failed legislative history, failed amendment in any case?
No, not at all. Clearly, it's within your purview to consider it. We argue that it's simply not persuasive.
Is it your position that we need to look at legislative history at all, or are you just suggesting that if we do look at legislative history, we need to look at the right legislative history?
Absolutely. The latter. Again, if our primary argument is plain language, and if the plain language is clear, you don't need to look at legislative history. We address legislative history because we know the Acting Court addressed it, defense addresses it, and if you're going to look at it, look at the right source. Moreover, they cite to this supposed split, even if a minor split among the circuits, 5th, 8th, and 11th. Again, 11th Circuit is the Leibowitz case, which we characterize as an outlier, as Runner said, or characterize it as, rather, and marginalized, or should be marginalized. Moreover, the 8th Circuit cases that I alluded to earlier, Pearson and Young, both use language, again, not directly on point, but all talk about intent as the intent to entice the minor, and has nothing to do with the intent to actually engage in sex with that minor. Moreover, the cases that this court should look to, if you're looking for directly on-point analogies, look to the First Circuit in Duenels and the Sixth Circuit in Bailey. Both of these cases do directly address the intent required for an attempt version of 2422D. Both of those cases address this same argument that was put forth by ACCA, that you can't entice someone or persuade someone to do something you don't actually intend to have happen. They dismissed that. They said, sure, that may happen in most cases, or in some cases, but it's not a logical premise. It's not a logical maxim.
Counsel, with respect to the granted issue, do you have a case that supports your argument that we can look to the plea colloquy with respect to the Article 80 offenses and basically cross it over even though the military judge didn't do so?
I don't have a case, Your Honor, for that, but simply Redlinsky, I think, is the most persuasive case this court should look to. Redlinsky, Your Honor. Again, looking at the totality of the record, whether it's the stiff, whether it's earlier plea colloquy with regard to other offenses. Again, prior to the plea colloquy, this judge talked to this defense counsel and this accused and said, this charge sheet talks about attempt in two different ways. You're clear that attempt requires substantial step and intent. Yes. Then he went into, or she went into, the definitions of substantial step and in specific intent with regard to Article 8. Then asked with regard to Specification 1. When she turned to Specification 2, the other Article 8 offense, asked the accused, do you need me to repeat any of these definitions? He said no. Turning to Article, or the 2422B offense, do you need me to repeat any of the definitions? No. At the end of the colloquy, after all three specifications were discussed, the judge again said, offer them an opportunity to counsel. If you think I'm wrong on anything, I invite you to correct me. Is there any other question or concern you have about these definitions or explanations as I've given them to you? No.
Again, are you arguing waiver?
No, Your Honor. What I'm arguing is that is part of the totality of the record that evinces this particular accused knew what attempt meant, that included substantial step. Again, our primary focus is the stipulation of fact, which details the use of language and the things that he did that he characterizes himself as a step towards persuasion. That he characterized himself as a step toward persuasion. Unless there are any further questions from you.
All right. Case is now submitted, and we thank you both. And we'll stand in recess until 20 past the hour.
All rise. The court stands in recess until 10:20 a.m.